This is KHOI, Story City Ames and Surrounding Community.
Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with station manager Mike Murphy, who's engineering for this morning's program. And our Milford Township neighbor, Patchler Baum, is here to help us greet this day and welcome you, our KHOI listeners. And folks, KHOI's Sam Wormley has joined us as well. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Mike. And good morning to all you KHOI listeners. Mike, I enjoy listening to nationally syndicated programs on KHOI for community radio stations such as Democracy Now!, Letters in Politics, and the program like Planetary Science. Additionally, there are other programs from people I know and respect. Mary Richards reading on the community bookshelf, Don Alana about food and cooking and local agriculture, Broken Beyond with Michael White, and Bob's 8-Track Garage Sale. These programs are from people I know and love. So why do they do it?
Yeah, Sam, why do they do it?
Well, it's a lot of work and they don't get paid. They produce programs for the community radio to give to you. It's to give to all of us. Local musicians, artists, folks passionate about life, giving their local communities, giving to our local communities and beyond. So my response is that I give financially. And as a volunteer, I give to the radio station in terms of doing a program because I want KHOI to thrive. Listeners can go to the website, khoifm.org, and press the donate button. Basic memberships start at $60. That's $60 per year. And if you work out the mathematics, that's like 16 cents a day. What can you get for 16 cents a day? What you can get is supporting your local community radio station. Or give whatever makes you feel good about supporting your local community radio station. Now, how do you do that again? Listeners, just go to our website, khoifm.org, and press the donate button. And you will feel really good about contributing to your local community radio station.
Well, Sam, thank you for that. I feel really good. And to find out how folks feel, let's go to Pat.
Hey, this morning is our area's first measurable snow accumulation. It's going to range between 1 and 3 inches. Early in the day, winds will blow from the southeast, then we'll be switching to the northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Daytime temperatures will be in the low to mid 30s. And folks, there ain't going to be no more Indian summer in the forecast. Snow showers will be light this afternoon and will continue into the evening hours. Expect our nighttime lows to be around 24, and with northwest winds and light snow showers continue. Our sunrise is occurring right about now at 7:03 a.m., and this evening our sun will set at 4:54 p.m., and if you see the waning moon, it is close to being in the last quarter, and currently it's 30 degrees.
Thanks, Pat. And right now I'd like to introduce Dr. Jared Troy. He's with Iowa State University's College of Vet Medicine. He's the equine internal medicine and emergency veterinarian there at Iowa State University. And good morning, Dr. Troy. How are you?
You bad, Mike. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Did you go out and brush the critters this morning? Get that snow off their backs, right?
Yep, sure did.
Yeah. So, you know, this time of year, horses, and I can attest to this, we have to change their diets a little bit more. And some other things that are going on, weather changes, that kind of thing. And they can develop a situation called colic. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is and what we need to do about it?
Yeah, so colic is something in horses that's very, very common. It's probably more common than a horse breaking their leg or fracturing their leg, and can be just as life-threatening. but there are some colics that may not be quite as life-threatening. So the biggest thing, I think, for a lot of owners is that when they think of colic, because as veterinarians, we use that term a lot, is that it's its own disease. And what it is, it's not a disease, it's a symptom of intestinal diseases. And so that's the hard part, is that there are many forms of colic, or the disease processes that cause colic. So colic just means abdominal discomfort. And that could be for a variety of different reasons. This time of year, like you said, probably the most common is like impaction type colics, where essentially they're kind of constipated due to a buildup of feed material and a lack of water or hydration. Because with the ice and everything, you know, if anybody has horses, they can tell you they either have water heaters, or that two or three times a day they're going to break out the ice out of the water buckets, which I did growing up as well, and I can tell you how much fun that is. But it does make it a little bit harder for the horses to go out and drink the water, similar to cattle. But there's other types of colic diseases that can cause necrosis, or kind of cut off the blood supply, that's more life-threatening than the obstructive or constipation colic. And trying to figure that out is kind of the veterinarian's job. And so that's the hardest part, I think, for owners, is that horses may seem sometimes like they're fragile, but actually they're very, very tough. You know, I've seen horses that throw themselves on the ground from kind of like a little bellyache or a impaction colic. And I've seen others stand there just kind of not moving, not want to eat, but they're the ones that have intestine that is kind of dying on the inside of them, but you wouldn't know it because they're just standing there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one thing. There's one thing I could kind of tell owners, is that if you think your horse is not right, or it seems like they're colicking, it's not a bad idea to have the vet out, because there's so many different types of colic problems that trying to figure that out as best we can is going to help them out in the long run.
So you're calling colic, it's more a symptom of something that's going on with the animal. folks that maybe don't have horses, or there are other critters, other pets that do get what we would call colic for a variety of reasons. I mean, even little babies, if they're have gas colic is what they're suffering from most of the time. What are some of the things that, in the case of the horse owner can do? Well, number one, of course, is, hey, the horse is off. It's not acting right. Call your veterinarian. What can you do in the meantime to try to make the horse more comfortable? I know when our horses in the past were down, we wanted to get them up at least and try to walk them around. Is that a way to do that?
Yeah, excellent question. And I think that's the things that you can do, is that, you know, is you want to do these things kind of within reason, or kind of a reasonable time frame. And so, like, if your horse is down, the biggest thing is we don't want them to hurt themselves. And so as a veterinarian, and my experience is that a horse comes in and it looks like it has abrasions or wounds around its head and it's been acting colicky, is that horse probably has a severe problem. Because if that horse is throwing itself on the ground so bad to hurt its head, then something in its abdomen is really hurting it. And so if a horse is laying down, but they're kind of just laying down comfortably, they're not rolling, they're not hitting their head, is that I may let them lie down. But if they're hitting their head, if they're, you know, keep trying to roll or get themselves in kind of these nefarious situations, like getting cast in the stall where they kind of get stuck in a spot and can't get out of it, then yes, I think we need to get them up, walk them, and make sure they're not hurting themselves and that sort of thing. And I think walking horses is a great thing. But I think that, you know, as a veterinarian and other veterinarians, we kind of recommend that to owners, is sometimes that gets taken to an extreme where a horse may be colicky and then gets walked for hours to try and fix the colic. What I can tell you is that if the colic doesn't resolve with walking for like 10 minutes, chances are it's not going to resolve with walking. So if you're trying to say, okay, should I call the vet? Should I not? Let's walk it. Let's see. if you walk it for 10 minutes and it's still colicky, probably a good idea to call the vet out. But if you've called the vet and in the meantime, walking them is great to try and get things moving, you know, try and keep them from eating anything. If you feel comfortable, you know, you can give an appropriate dose of Banamine either in the mouth, or if, you know, you have more experience or like a farm manager, barn manager, you can sometimes give it IV, but you do want to be a little cautious because if that medication goes outside the vein, then you can have necrosis problems and that sort of thing. But usually those are the kind of things that we'll recommend owners. Probably the number one thing I would say to every owner is that this could be your best horse. This could be your, like, the horse that you grew up with and everything. But if their abdomen hurts too bad, is that they don't remember that at that moment, and they are just trying to deal with the pain. So you want to make sure that you stay safe and don't get hurt. Because sometimes that they can be violently painful, and you just want to make sure that you're in a safe spot.
Oh, it's like any critter. Well, humans, I mean, you just want people to be get away from you. You want to try to make your own comfort. Yeah, we've all experienced that, I think, in one case or another. You mentioned Banamine. Now, what is that? Is that a relaxant or is that a painkiller? Or why would that be administered?
Banamine is somewhat of a pain management, so it's similar to ibuprofen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does have some side effects. Like if we give too much, it can really damage their kidneys or cause abdominal problems as well. And so that's when we use it. We want to make sure we're not giving too much. But it's kind of like a ibuprofen that will help with some pain management in the horse. And it is typically available over the counter or from your veterinarian. And, you know, whenever possible, I would say, you know, ask your vet what a good dose would be before you give it.
Okay. Now, one thing, the more severe cases, folks maybe don't realize this, but the anatomy of the horse, the internal organs are a little, the way they're put together and held in place is a lot different than, say, some of the other critters like the monogastrians. Those organs, and there's room for that to move around. It's not as well stabilized. Am I on the right track there? And that's part of what this potential twisting or torsions and things could lead to a colic situation?
You are exactly on the right track. So just to give some perspective is that, you know, the horse's small intestine mm-hmm. is anywhere between 60 to 80 feet long. And obviously the horse is not that long. And so that small intestine can kind of move or go anywhere that it wants to. And sometimes it gets itself into trouble. Then the colon parts are also typically somewhere probably maybe 15 to 20 feet long. And the beginning of that is very, very mobile. And so that kind of starts on the right side of the horse, goes towards the front of the horse, and then wraps around on the left side towards the back of the horse. And then it doesn't stop there because then it goes forward again, kind of wraps around the front a little bit. And then that's when it starts heading towards the back end of the horse at that point. So there's a lot of freely movable parts in the horse that can lead not to just to like strangulations and cutting off the blood supply, but also what we call displacements, where the colon can move wherever it wants, or the small intestine may move into kind of very tight crevices or holes and get trapped there. And then once they get trapped there, that's when we run into issues.
So we've talked about colic being a symptom of something going on. And I know if you have good quality feed and clean, fresh water, those are probably the two best factors, would you say, as far as trying to prevent these issues in most cases?
Yes. So for the ones that you can reduce the chances, that is the best thing that you can do.
Okay.
Unfortunately, with some of the other colic problems, there's no way that you can reduce the risk on them.
Yeah.
It's just, for some horses, it's just a matter of time and just bad luck. But if you want to try and reduce the risk, is that having plenty of water, good quality hay and feed and, you know, whatnot, that's the best that you can do.
And I know that we always have a mineral block that has some salt so they can get that, because I know there's instances where, depending upon where you are, if those animals don't have access to that, they'll start going for soils and sand impaction, I know, in a place that I lived in an earlier part of my life, that occurred, I know, in one critter that we were taking care of, and it was because I think they were looking for mineral. They didn't have something, and they go to that, and they're blocking things with sand. Is that fairly common around here or not so in Iowa?
It just depends. Depends on the horse, where they're at. But having a, like they had, like you said, the mineral blocks versus maybe just salt blocks is very helpful to make sure they get all the minerals. And I did my training at Michigan State. Mm-hmm. And there, the soil itself is just very sandy. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing, like you're talking about sand colics, is that, you know, to try to get an idea of how sandy the soil is in your area. Because if a horse eats off the ground, is that could be a way for them to get that sand and get sand colic. And where we were in Michigan is that, you know, you go out and look at the soil, well, it just looks like normal dirt, like you're not on the beach, it's not sandy, but there's enough sand particles in there that can lead to sand, or sometimes, you know, can lead to what we call enteroliths, which are just rocks,
right,
that form in the GI tract that get big enough, you know. I mean, we're talking, you know, sometimes anywhere between baseball to basketball size or bigger. And once they get that big, they can't move on out of the rectum and get passed along with the feces. And so then they can lead to obstructive colics and that sort of thing.
Sure. Okay. So we just pretty much, I think, scratched the surface of some of the causes of these situations. But we've got about 1 minute left. Can we generally just wrap up some things to look for and things to do to prevent, and the number one issue, or the number one thing, is even if you're not sure, it's better to call your vet.
I would agree. So just to kind of wrap things up is that, you know, colic's a symptom, and that could be the horse is not eating, the horse is pawing at the ground, rolling on the ground, using its back legs to kick at its abdomen, you know, kind of looking back at its flanks, those sort of things. And then there's a variety of things that can cause that. And, you know, one of the things I do want to mention before we finish up is that for those signs is that it doesn't necessarily have to be in the abdomen. So horses would call it colic, come into me, and we diagnose them not with an abdominal problem, but with pneumonia.
Okay.
Or that they have laminitis or founder. Or instead of it being, you know, what we can kind of call it, they have more diarrhea. Which is can still have colic signs, but it's somewhat treated a little bit differently and it's a little bit more severe in a horse. And so that's why, you know, ideally whenever possible is, you know, having your vet out to try and help navigate that kind of forest of colic for the right path on which way the horse went is kind of what I would recommend. And then, you know, we talked about some of the things that owners can try and do at home in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you mentioned laminitis or founder, and that's something we'll talk to you about in a future program, I'm sure, that having to do more with circulation and the legs and feet in the horse. So sure appreciate you joining us today. We've been talking with Dr. Jared Troy with Iowa State University's College of Veterinary Medicine. He's our equine internal medicine and emergency veterinarian. Thank you for joining us this morning, Jared.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right. Hit the trail.
All right. Yeah. Take care.
All right. And if you're just joining us, it's about 19 minutes after the hour. And Sam Wormley is here with us, along with Pat Schillerbaum and Mike Murphy. How are you, Sam?
Hello, Mike. I'm good. And I'd like listeners to know that I'm one of the producers here at Community radio station, KHOI-FM 89.1. I enjoy listening to nationally syndicated programs for community radio stations such as Democracy Now!, Letters in Politics, and Big Picture Science. Additionally, there are those programs from people that I know and respect, for example, Mary Richards reading on the community bookshelf, Donna Lana, and Don Alana's show is about food and cooking and local agriculture. You know, what the farmers do. That's agriculture. And Michael White, he has a program called Baroque and Beyond. Bob's 8-track garage sales, and Science Bites. Taking a bite out of science, I thought I would just let you know that the two guys that do that, and turns out to be you, Mike, and me, we are sharing our excitement about science with our KHOI listeners. So these programs are from people I know and respect. In fact, Mike, I even respect you. How about that?
My gosh, thank you. I think you're the first.
The first one, huh? Well, anyway, so why do we do this? Why do we create these programs? It's a lot of work and we don't get paid. But these programs are, we do this for our community. They are for the community radio station to give to you, to give to all of us. Local musicians, artists, folks passionate about their lives, give to our local community and beyond. I give financially and as a volunteer because this is radio at its best, and I really want KHOI to thrive. So, listeners, what can you do to contribute? Well, you can go to our website, khoifm.org, and press the donate button. Or you could actually mail a check in to KHOI Radio, 622 Douglas Avenue, Ames, Iowa, 50010. Basic memberships start at $60 a year. That's about 16 cents a day. And whatever you can give makes you feel good about supporting the local radio station, please do.
Okay, Sam. Thanks for sharing that with us. We'll, I'm sure we'll visit with you a little bit later in the hour, so please stand by. And
okay.
What we're going to do next is, Pat, we had pleasure of, we know Jim Pease, all of us here in the studio, and just recently he was awarded very deserving recognition through the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation.
He is a conservation man, and worked with ISU Extension for a number of years in his career, professor here at Iowa State University. But yeah, he's a great one.
Yeah, he's been, of course, on public radio. He's been with us a few times. Great conservationist, as you say. So we're going to listen to a little bit of an interview I did with Jim and also with Joe J. Jack with Iowa Natural Heritage.
I'm speaking with Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation's Director of Communications, Joe J. Jack. Hi, Joe. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Mike.
I'm glad you could join us today, Joe. If you would please share with our listeners what the mission of the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation is about.
Absolutely. Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation has been around since 1979. Our mission that whole time has been to protect and restore Iowa's land, water, and wildlife. We are a nonprofit conservation group. We're member supported, and we work statewide in a number of different ways to do conservation. Most of that is helping to create more parks, trails, and wildlife areas around the state, but we also work with private landowners to put permanent protection on their land. We help build multi-use trails around the state, and we're all about getting people outdoors to experience nature and trying to create more places where they can do that.
Very good. Occasionally, you recognize individuals or projects. I know you've got one for the 2022 season. Could you tell us about that latest recognition?
Absolutely, yeah. We do everything we can to honor good conservationists across Iowa, and we're fortunate to work with a lot of them. We have had in place for more than 30 years the Hagee Heritage Award, named in honor of Lawrence and Eula Hagee. A panel of our board members picks a winner that is nominated by the public every year. And this year, we're really excited. We have someone that's probably well-known to your listening community there. We're really excited to have the 2022 Hagee Heritage Award coming up.
And that is?
Dr. Jim Pease. I'm sure a lot of folks are familiar with Dr. Pease. He's been around the Iowa State community and conservation in Iowa for a long time. He had a wonderful nomination that was spearheaded by the Outdoor Alliance of Story County and a number of other folks that have had the pleasure of working with Jim over the years. And we're really excited that we get to honor him with the Hagee Heritage Award this year.
I think in the last year or so, Jim's name has come up a few times, and some of us have wondered, gosh, what's taken so long? You know, Jim is, he shares, if you look down the list of awardees in the past, the recipients. That's quite the list of individuals. And how long have you been recognizing folks with the Ulihagee Award?
Yeah, since 1989 is when it was started. It was the children of Lawrence and Ulihagee. So Jan Hagee Schindel and Jean Hagee Logan of Mobile, Iowa, endowed the award. They inherited a farm in Henry County, and they used the income from that to fund the endowment for this award to make it possible every year. And their goal from the beginning was to honor folks, especially people that do it in a volunteer capacity, mm-hmm. that devote outstanding personal voluntary, personal service, and commitment to improving Iowa's quality of life and natural environment and encouraging others to do the same. And like you said, Jim is one of those people that you had to go back and check that he hasn't won it already.
There's
a really great list of conservationists on there, including yourself, Mike, from back in the early 2000s. There's a great history of people from Story County, the Ames community, that have won it. We've had a few in recent years, including George and Trish Patrick a couple years ago, mm-hmm. that won, and Rick Dietz a couple years ago, a super volunteer. We're always excited to get together with these folks, and we're excited to do that again this coming week.
Well, I think it's really a great opportunity, especially you do this for the statewide folk. We have a local award here called the Olaf Smedahl Conservation Award, and we do a similar kind of nominating process and look at criteria. It's great that Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation has taken it upon themselves to be able to use this award for statewide recognition for folks throughout Iowa.
Yeah, you know, we've gotten to know some folks that were not familiar to INHF and to our audiences, and learning more about the great work they're doing. And it's created some partnerships that's making more conservation happen too. We also have folks that we've worked closely on land protection with, whether it's on their own land or helping to create new public wildlife areas and parks. And we're always happy to be able to honor those all around the state. You know, like I said, we have a good tradition of honoring people in Story County and Central Iowa, but we're all over the state.
Joe, if you could just briefly highlight some of those accomplishments the nominating committee looked at and evaluated when they decided to select Jim as the recipient this year.
Yeah, well, Jim, you know, is known as Mr. Wildlife to many, and he's been at it for a long time. Jim taught wildlife interpretation at Iowa State for more than 24 years and served as an extension wildlife specialist at Iowa State for more than 20 years. He's always advocated for sustainable farm management through the Leopold Center, the Iowa DNR, and many other places too. But I think that he was really recognized for what he does, you know, beyond his day job. Mm-hmm. He's done so much to promote conservation across Iowa. He developed a series of conservation booklets in tandem with the Iowa Association of Naturalists. He served as the 4-H Youth Development Specialist for a long time. He is known to many people from Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio, where he gets to share the story of conservation in Iowa with many people and give tips and hints for people that are interested in learning about doing what they can do on their own land. He's a consultant for environmental education projects, a writer, a speaker, presenter across the state and the country. He's guided Iowans on international wildlife tours and has also served in a volunteer capacity on the Story County Conservation Board, among other places, for a long time. So Jim kind of does it all. He's one of those super volunteers. He's done it in his career, but he's doing whatever he can to make conservation happen and help educate people about it across Iowa.
You mentioned that he appears periodically with Charity Nebbe on WOI on her Talk of Iowa program. And we like to think that they're not competitors. We have different niches that we fill. We're a community station, and of course, she's statewide. Yeah, Jim, I know many folks, that's how they know him, the voice of conservation, you know, and natural resources. Good point there. Now, there's going to be a recognition at McFarland Park that by the time folks listen to this, it will have already occurred. But could you just briefly cover that, what's going to go on there?
Yeah, our recognition this year, it's going to happen at the Conservation Center out at McFarland Park. This is one of my favorite events every year. You know, we encourage Jim's friends and family to come, but I think this one is going to be even a little bigger, having a great conservation community gathering out there. But what we like to do is have INHF, representatives from INHF, tell a little bit about what we do. But then we really want to hear from the people that nominated Jim for this award, why they nominated him, why they think he's deserving, and then get to hear from Jim himself. It's a casual environment. There'll be some good food and drinks out there, but it's really about learning about what we can do to further conservation in Iowa. Honoring Jim is a great way to do that.
Besides having the recognition, are there some other things that Jim receives from the foundation?
Yeah. As part of the award, Jim will get a $1,000 award to do with as he pleases. Also, an acorn sculpture with a plaque that is made by a couple super volunteers in Center Point that have been making this award for INHF for more than 30 years now. It's a beautiful wooden acorn sculpture that goes along with it. But I think we really look at it as an opportunity not just to honor Jim, but to honor the work he's done around conservation in Iowa and help spread his message of education.
Joe, can you briefly tell our listeners, how would one go about nominating somebody if they felt there was somebody that needs this kind of recognition? How do they go about that?
Absolutely. They can find out more on the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation website. If they go to inhf.org on our website, if you go in the What We Do tab, and at the bottom there's scholarships and awards. You can find out more about the Hagee Heritage Award. Nominations for the 2023 award will be due in early July of 2023. You know, you've got to have some nomination letters, some supporting letters from other folks. It's not an onerous process, but it's one that we do take seriously in honoring good conservation folks across Iowa. So find out more on our website at inhf.org.
Very good. Any last words from you, Joe?
Well, I want to thank you for having me on, Mike. We're just really excited we can honor Jim and get together with folks in Story County. It's such a great conservation community and some good friends of INHF, so we're looking forward to it.
Thank you, Joe. That's Joe Jajak, the Communications Director of the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation with the Eula Hagee Award. Jim, I understand you are the 2022 recipient of the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation Eula Hagee Award. Did that surprise you?
It surprised me tremendously, Mike. I look at the list of distinguished people who have received that award over the years, and to be able to join that list is to me just a great honor to be able to think that I'm worthy of this award. I had no idea that I was coming up for it. So it was really a complete surprise when Joe McGovern called me and told me I was the recipient for this year. A really pleasant surprise. And I was sort of speechless, which is unusual for me, as you might.
Yeah, I can only recall only one other time. But
yes, that's about right. I guess it has to do with not just with my professional career, but more with the volunteerism that I have, you know, worked on, especially since retirement, offering leadership to various groups from Story County Conservation to the Friends of Ada Hayden to the Iowa Wildlife Center to, you know, all kinds of things that I've been involved with and continue to be involved with. I think that's the only way things change. That's the thing about this award that is such an honor to me, is because it's made me reflect on the folks that I get to work with, you know, the other conservation folks in the state. And they're really just an amazing bunch of people. And that, to me, is the real honor behind it, is that I get to continue to work with some wonderful folks in the field of conservation across the state who give time and money and energy to making this world a better place. I've been so fortunate to spend my life visiting wild places and getting to see wild things and getting to take other people to do that as well. That's pretty lucky. I consider myself very lucky to be able to do that all these years and continue to do it in my retirement from Iowa State.
This has got to be a real honor for you, because the influence you've had, the impact you've had on countless numbers of Iowa State graduates. Plus, you're known as the voice on the radio, Mr. Conservation, Mr. Natural Resources. The things you've taught the people that you've had an impact on, I think, have been a real positive influence. I'm sure a lot of folks appreciate that.
Well, thanks, Mike. I appreciate it and hope to be able to continue to do it for lots of years. I have lots of people to thank, from, first of all, my wife, who's my prime supporter, Story Conservation Partners, who nominated me, and the folks that they got to write letters of support, including Wendy Winterstein and Charity Nebbe and Judy Levings, all people that I've worked with over the years. It's been just an amazing group of folks.
Jim, I feel privileged to know you as a friend. I've learned a lot. Hopefully I've adopted some of your techniques when I'm trying to get some things across when it comes to conservation, natural resources. Thanks for all you do for conservation, and good luck and many more years.
My pleasure. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Jim. And I'm Mike Metz, reporting for KHOI, your Heart of Iowa Community Radio.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
And we're visiting with Susan Guiazda today, the information officer for the City of Ames. Good morning, Susan.
Well, what a good snowy morning it is.
Yeah, it kind of cleaned everything up, except there's one project people are really concerned about there at the corner of Duff and 13th.
Yeah, that construction project continues. There were a little bit of delays in this whole 13th Street construction. As you recall, there was some water main break.
Right.
So that put them a little bit behind, and they had to do some undermining work under the street. And yes, the intersection there is a little bit behind schedule, but they expect to get caught up very soon. As you know, most of those projects are going to button up for the year. It's going to get too cold to be out there working and too cold to be pouring. And so they'll move on, but we hope to get the streets back in good shape. I know it's been a source of irritation for a lot of people, and we certainly appreciate their patience as we move forward. Just a few quick items before I introduce my guest, Liz. Snow ordinance. Our first snow ordinance of this winter season is in effect today at noon. That means if you park along a snow route, if you see those red and white snow route signs on your street, you need to remove your vehicle from the street until it has stopped snowing and the plow has plowed from curb to curb. So that will be different in different parts of town. There is not an all clear because it's when this happens for your street. So just pay attention. If you park on a snow route, move your car into a driveway or to a non-snow route street, and then pay attention to the weather and when the plows come by. And then the last thing very quickly is tonight we have a city council meeting. It is a workshop for the Climate Action Plan. That begins at 6 p.m. You can watch us streaming. You can pick up the story tomorrow on the archive if you miss it today. Or you can come to City Hall, 515 Clark Avenue, and experience the meeting in person.
All right. So thank you, Susan. Get out there and crunch those little snow crystals there. It's a great snow packing. I gave Pat and Mike their first snowballs this morning.
Yeah.
Well, good for you. Way to get into the season.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of season, we talked about winterizing, and that's when I thought, why not bring Liz Calhoun, our stormwater analyst, into the station to talk about things that you can do, still not too late to do, to winterize your outdoors.
Good morning, Liz.
Good morning. How's everyone doing today? Snowy morning.
Yeah, it's a snowy morning, but it's kind of a pleasant one. It's not too windy out there, and it's not too cold, so it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful, the way the snow's sticking to everything. And yeah, it happened very quickly from those warm temperatures down to the cold. And when Susan asked me to be on this morning, I, thought, well, it's getting a little late to be winterizing, and now it really feels late. But there's still time to just make sure your rain barrel's unhooked and before it gets too cold, and get those, set up for the winter. And there's still time. If you happen to plant a tree this fall, you can still apply for a tree rebate, a native tree rebate.
Okay.
So that's still available out there for people. And since we had the snow, I thought I might just touch a little bit on winter care of our sidewalks and driveways.
Sure.
Just to remind people to use the correct amount of salt. You want to be safe. You want to put down enough salt that you can, you know, gain some de-icing and help your walkway melt. But you don't want to overdo it. And so we see a lot of times people just throw down, you know, tons and tons of salt on sidewalks, and it's too much. The salt sits there, and then eventually will wash away and get into our stream.
Yeah, and what the salt is doing is, of course, pulling the heat out of the surrounding atmosphere to help the melting process. And the other thing about that is, as you said, we don't want it to be washing off and going into our watershed. And also, if you've got brand new concrete, you don't want to spread that on there because the concrete's still curing.
Right, exactly. And chloride is one of those things in the streams that the water really retains the chloride. Like it's, we see it. Well, there's the first flush, of course, in the spring as things melt out, but then you continue to see chloride in the creeks through the spring. So, it's just a good reminder to, just be cautious of it and, you know, make your sidewalk safe, but just don't do more than you need to.
Sure. What about, talking about outdoor hydrants and those kinds of things? I assume that happens in the park systems. That's probably a lot of those water sources have already been turned off, I would think. I haven't had a chance to talk with Keith about that.
Yeah, I believe so. I think I saw a notice maybe about a month ago or a few weeks ago that they were going to be turning those off when we got the first cold snap. So, yeah, I'm assuming they're probably all turned off at this point.
Yeah, I fortunately last week got the last of my garden hoses up and wrapped up and drained. So those poor people who forgot to do that, you're going to have to search for it now under the snow and wait for it to warm up a little, or you could have some cracked hoses.
Yeah, and the other reminder too is I know there might still be some leaves under the snow that people weren't able to maybe get collected as much as they wanted to, but just feel comfortable that those leaves will be providing good habitat for pollinators and through the winter if you didn't quite get it quite as clean as maybe you thought you wanted to, but that there is a benefit to that as well.
Yeah. Let's talk about some other little critters and overwintering, but let's first talk about how they are affected by some of the plans that are going on at the Brookside Park, the Iowa Creek project that's starting or in the process. What can you tell us about that, Liz?
Yeah, so we're proceeding with our final design. We will have one more public meeting coming up probably in early January. Mm-hmm. And so we're, trying to get all the details worked out for a late winter construction. And we're just plowing ahead. We had a few meetings earlier this year and received comment and questions from people. And we are taking those questions and answering them and trying to really be very deliberate in our design. And so we're, basically working on that right now.
Okay. Now there was, I think it was maybe Prairie Rivers of Iowa, that there was some surveys being taken of some of the macroinvertebrates and other things in the Iowa Creek, in the stream bed around there. And we're finding that there's some freshwater mussels that we should be concerned about because of the fact that they're maybe rare or endangered. What's the plan for that?
Yeah, so actually that's a good question. We did a survey last year for the mussels and found that there were some of the more the less common ones in there. And so we now this year, about a month ago, we relocated those mussels. We pulled, I think, There were a total of 52 mussels taken out. They weren't all the more unusual ones or endangered or threatened, but we did relocate those upstream. And so when we work in the stream and relocate part of the stream this winter, those mussels will be protected because they've been relocated.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was exciting to see what they found. And, yeah, a group of volunteers went out and helped our consultant and had a nice few days out there digging for mussels in the creek bed.
Yeah, now the adults, of course, they're pretty much immobile unless they get washed out during a flood event or something like that. But can you tell us a little bit about the importance of a freshwater mussel for our listeners, Liz?
Yeah, they're great for water quality. They clean up the water. We found even on the Skunk River that almost instantly they help to clear up the cloudiness in the water, and they provide it's a great water quality feature that they just help us out to clean up our water.
Yeah, and it's some listeners might not realize this, but the mussels, I mentioned that as an adult they're immobile, but the forms where they are first released, they actually will attach to fish gills. So if they've got clean water, the fish come back and they help move those critters upstream. And so they're spread throughout the stream. So that's how they get spread through the system. Is that right?
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah.
So, which provides natural filters all up and down the stream system. So, and of course there are critters that like otters and some of the birds and things that will use those as food. So they provide, they're part of that, the overall web. So
yeah.
Great that we're taking time to redistribute those and protect them. Are there other things that landowners need to be aware of as the ground freezes, that kind of thing? Some of these surface effects that we might be doing can get into our water system. Are there other things that we need to be cautious about this time of year, Liz?
Well, I guess the other thing would just be making sure if you have any drains, outdoor drains that could be could get clogged. You just want to be conscious of that, to be sure that, you know, there's no debris or ice around. Again, with the leaves still, a lot of leaves still around. You just want to be sure that those drains are clear to make sure we don't have flooding. So even if you have some in the street, just helping our street department out and maybe clearing the leaves out of the grates and that kind of thing. If it's right in front of your house, it's all helpful. Just to make sure as the snow melts that we're not having some localized flooding,
right?
That kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's important to remember that as the ground freezes, things are not going to soak in until spring now, pretty much. So it's just going to go right into the storm system and into our local streams. Pat?
And Liz, we're involved with our membership drive this time of year, and I thought I might just take this opportunity to thank you for all the times that you're on KHOI and with your staff and all your other co-workers that contribute so much to this segment of KHOI's local talk. And thanks for always agreeing to come on.
Yeah, well, thank you. I enjoyed it. I look forward to chatting with you guys and, talking about whatever's going on in our stormwater division. Thank you for having me.
Keeps our community well-versed in what's going on, and we really appreciate all the knowledge you share with us and take time to do that. Thanks, Liz.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Liz.
Yeah, Liz Calhoun, and she's our stormwater analyst for the City of Ames. Have a great time in the snow.
Yeah, thank you. You too.
Just another form of stormwater analyst taking in there. So, Sam Wormley is, again, haunting the airwaves here. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Mike. For our KHOI listeners, please consider being a sustaining member. Or you can become a sustaining friend of KHOI by pledging $5, $10, or $20 a month. Of course, the more you pledge, the more your local radio station can provide for you in music, word, local news, and features. KHOI depends on its unpaid volunteers to produce shows that you hear at 89.1 on your FM dial. We depend on our listeners to provide financial support needed to keep the transmitter humming and pay for operational expenses, heating the building, keeping the electronics working properly, and so on. And it helps make our operations much more stable if we know there's a set amount of revenue coming in each month. Listeners can go to our website, khoifm.org, and press the donate button. Or listeners could mail a check to KHOI Radio at 622 Douglas Avenue. That's 622 Douglas Avenue, Ames, Iowa, 50010. Basic memberships start at $60. That's about 16 cents a day. But please give whatever makes you feel good about supporting your local community radio station. Mike, are you a sustainer?
Sam, I am. I'm a sustaining member, and it gives me a good feeling knowing that it's taking out of an account automatically each month, that I'm giving something each month. I don't have to worry about writing that check or sending that in. And hey, it's all part of it. It's painless. It's something I don't have to worry about. And that helps the budgeting process here for the station. So appreciate that you asked me that question.
Yes, I've become a sustaining member also. Some people can just have a monthly amount taken out of a credit card or a debit card. You can actually go to your bank and arrange to have money transferred automatically directly from the bank to KHOI. In fact, that's what I do. And then I don't have to worry about it. And I know I'm supporting the radio station. I don't have to remember to do this or do that. It's just continuing on into the future to make our radio station thrive.
Yeah. Now, Sam, you and I have frequently on Science Bites talk about the climate, the concerns we have, the folks have to reduce their CO2 footprint, as we call it, ways to reduce our usage, those kinds of things. And one way that we can do that, we've been pushing this for, gosh, all 3+ years that we've been doing Science Bites off and on. We talk about converting from ICE vehicles, the internal combustion engine vehicles, to at the least a hybrid or better to an electric vehicle. And where I'm going with this, Sam, is that there's a program that when folks decide that they're going to convert, and they should do that in the next year, I would say. Everybody should just make a pledge. I'm going to convert here in the next year to 2 years. They can turn in their old vehicle to KHOI as a donation, and we could use that.
That's an excellent idea, Mike. Not only will the people that convert to electric vehicles save money, because electric vehicle ownership always saves money over internal combustion engines, the fuel is less, which is electricity, or your own solar panels. Your maintenance is way down because there's no internal combustion engine to take care of. And not only does this benefit the station, but it just reduces the CO2 impact on the environment. Good idea, Mike.
Yeah, I know one of our members has done that recently. So I just thought, hey, we should try to push that a little bit more. Pat?
Boy, and all the creativity that I would like to include, turning in your old vehicle, what a great way. But even just a gift membership to somebody, you know, like if they're good at cooking, well, Lana and Donna's cooking show. You know, a membership with a little bit of writer, or if they're into science, you say, hey, Science Bites, 4:30 on Tuesdays, rebroadcast 10:30 on Saturdays. The gift and then the opportunity to listen and learn is a gift that keeps on giving.
I want to remind listeners that they can go to our website, khoifm.org, and press the donate button. And if you want to actually write a check and take it to the radio station, you can deliver it to KHOI Radio at 622 Douglas Avenue, Ames, Iowa, 50010. Any amount you can pledge, any amount you can contribute, will help the station thrive. We need to pay our bills. We need to be able to continue producing excellent programs for our community.
Well said.
Mike?
Sam, a question I have for you is, you talked about a basic membership, and if you could review that again. And then, are there other memberships or amounts that we could consider?
There are, Mike. First of all, the basic membership starts at $60. That's $60 a year. In other words, $5 a month, or 16 cents a day. And that's a really good investment on your part. There are other amounts. You know, we could say, gosh, you could be a dollar a day member or something like that. But really what it boils down to is, what are you comfortable giving? If you can give any amount, and of course, the more you give, the more support it provides the radio station. That's the nuts and bolts of it. Basic membership, $60 a day, and if you can give more, please do.
And because we're a nonprofit, that is tax deductible, folks. So think about that. There's another way maybe to do this. When you reach a certain age, there's a minimum requirement that you're required to take out in your retirement. And often folks will use that to provide donations to their favorite charities or volunteer or nonprofit organizations. So if there are any listeners out there that have reached that magic age, please consider KHOI in your giving for that as well.
And you know why that's so, Mike? The reason is that we would normally have to pay taxes on that minimum amount that we have to take out after age 72. Mm-hmm. And if you donate it to a 501c3 organization like KHOI Radio, you don't pay the taxes. So it's a win for you, and it's a win for the organization that you give money to. In our case, khoifm.org.
Thank you, Sam. And what is that way to contact us one more time?
khoifm.org. That's our website. And when you go to that website, press on the donate button, or you could mail a check directly to KHOI Radio, 622 Douglas Avenue, Ames, Iowa, 50010.
Thanks, Sam. And I want to thank Station Manager Mike Murphy for engineering this morning's local talk, and neighbor Pat Schlerbaum as well. A tug of the KHOI toque to producer Lynn Carey for all her work. Our guests today included Dr. Jared Troy, the equine veterinarian for Iowa State University's College of Vet Medicine, Susan Guiazda, our public information officer, along with stormwater analyst Liz Calhoun, and we also heard from Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation's Joe J. Jack and Jim Pease. Please consider becoming a member and making KHOI your community radio station with your financial support at khoifm.org, and press that yellow donate button to become a member.
Thank you, Mike Metz. Remember that you can also hear this online at khoifm.org and find links to our guests and information you heard during this program. This morning, following Democracy Now!, please be sure to stay with us for Tom Russell's All Things Piano at 9 a.m. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. See you again on the radio.
See you again.
This is Ed Ozenbaugh, and this is KHOI, Story City, Ames, and surrounding area.